So this is a challenge.
Like, what's the max speed on the fucking Model T? Or, like, whatever automobile they're fucking using was, like, 20 kilometers an hour? It would take years.
And welcome to another episode of The Lore Boys. This is where you get the best fake history, but today we will be returning with some real fake history, or real history, or fake history. Double fake is real history, I think.
Three lefts make a right.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of getting lost along the way on this episode, so that's a great thing to say. Yeah. Pete's going in blind for this one. My name's James Miller, and you are?
Pete.
There you
going in blind. Yeah, Pete. Oh, going in blind, actually.
Yep.
We don't have B-L-I-G-H-D is how you spell that. It's a silent G.
Yep. No Ethan today. Work in the video game industry, and we are coming up on Christmas. So he's basically like a little elf working in the workshop to make sure all of you guys could get your Madden 24s or whatever. I don't know what he actually works on because it's all confidential. But
yeah, wooden rocking horse 2024 is what he is currently doing overtime for at 8:06 p.m., which is sad.
Yep, he's alternating between a screaming baby and working overtime. So that's cool for him.
What's worse, listener, do you think? A screaming baby or a corporate client?
Yeah,
text your answers now.
I don't know, but there's gonna be a lot of struggles in this episode today. None that we're gonna have. We're gonna have a lot of laughs because this is a funny one. So we're gonna think back. Oh wait, before we get started, we got new patrons, don't we? I forgot.
Special thanks, shout outs to Clippy, God willing, the autocorrect paperclip from Microsoft Word, and. Inappropriate name, but thank God your money is green. Adeptus Astards also subscribe for £3. So
thank you very much.
While you still have a government, I hope that payment clears in your British pound. Pound sterling, thank you, Astards.
Yeah, and in terms of who asked for this one today, it's no one. One that I looked up and learned about. Kind of in the same vein as Action Park or the Kellogg episode. It's just a real life thing that happened that was kind of nutty. But before we get into it, let's think back over a century into the year 1908. So what do you know about the world in 1908? What does life look like in 1908 to you?
Christ. Depends on if you're fucking your cousin or not. So I think rich people are probably doing great. They're still European empires because this is pre-World War One. Mm-hmm. What else? Oh my God. Canada. Oh, I was going to say Canada didn't exist, but no, that's 1860s. Canada's young. We don't have all our provinces. No Newfoundland. No Nunavut.
Right.
I'm trying to think what else.
It's going to be more American centric, but it is joint. It is the rest of the world is
1908. Okay, yeah. So the South probably not in a great spot at the moment. Yeah.
there's a lot of like woman firsts and like black firsts around now. Like there's like the first black heavyweight champion. There's the first woman to go in an airplane is this year.
Okay, hang on a second. Yeah, but 1908, the first woman in an airplane, isn't that far past the first man on an airplane.
No, it's not that bad.
There are things that take us longer currently with the internet, right? That's not that bad.
I have an awful quote later that is just not great for women. So I'll tell you a little bit more about what's going on. The 1908 Summer Olympics, they're held in London. Originally, it was supposed to be in Rome, but Mount Vesuvius erupted in 1906.
Again?
In 1906. That's what my Wikipedia page told me. I don't know.
No, but it killed all those people in Pompeii.
was that Vesuvius?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
I believe so. I think Pompeii was the city. Vesuvius is the monster. right? sort of thing. I think Vesuvius is the volcano. Pompeii was the city that was, I guess people wouldn't have known. It just seems hindsight being 2020, me here, not caught, you know, encased in magma, jacking off. I think it's crazy to build a city on a volcano, personally.
It is a little crazy, but it's hard to know that it is a volcano until it hits, right?
I think they probably had a fire god that they invented, and it's like, that's where he lives.
True.
And then it killed them all.
Yeah. Most of America, there was no, like, infrastructure. People traveled by horse and buggy. The Model T would hit the market soon, but only in late 1908.
I was going to ask, when did the car come out?
It was in late 1908. We're going to be talking about something that goes on from February till about 5.5 months later.
Okay.
Only cities that had infrastructure like drivable roads or horseless carriages. Like, horseless carriages were known as being unreliable at best. People didn't like them. They're like, why would you use one of those? It can break down anytime. My horse always gets back up, kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Horses notoriously never break their ankles.
Yeah. The
equivalent of a flat tire.
Yeah. And it was like, they knew the horses were like the known thing. It's like for us right now, people prefer a car. They don't really want a car to drive for them. That's one step too far. I know what I know, and I'll trust that.
Fair enough. Not to actually this early in the episode, but like you can, they do go ballistic sometimes. You can control a horse and also a horseless carriage. The problem with a self-driving car is the fact that the one guy who is thinking it's a good idea is the most divorced man in history. Huh. Right?
It's true. I've been listening to a lot of John Carmack this week for whatever reason. I just like started listening to his podcast.
The Lex Friedman episode? Or does he have his own now?
He's kind of Elon-pilled. He thinks Elon's on the right way and going and stuff. But anyways, that's far from what we're talking about.
Here nor there, yeah.
Yeah. So here's a nice quote from the London Times. Next to woman, automobile is the most fragile thing on earth. Which I got from Speed, the TV station, had a documentary on what we're talking about today, which will be the Thomas Flyer and today's topic, the 1908 race from New York to Paris.
Okay.
So think about that.
We are basically doing Around the World in 80 Days, but the real thing, right?
Yes, in cars.
Brilliant. Wait a second. New York. Okay, now I'm in. This is so cool because I wanted to do like a adaptation book from real history. I guess not next now. I'll do something else just because this is going to give it away. I want people to forget. Was like the inspiration for Moby Dick. And then the actual thing that inspired it, because I rewatched an episode by, I can't remember her name. She was in one of the animated cartoon Midnight Gospel. She's in the last episode, the lady who talks about death. She's a mortician with Duncan Trussell. It's on Netflix.
I like Duncan Trussell.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I wanted to do something exactly like this.
Cool. Like, yeah. This is crazy. In 1908, New York to Paris race. So let's think about it. How would you do that trip? By car.
Well, you would need to get the car onto a boat.
Onto a boat.
And or right. a dirigible. Either a rigid structure or a soft structure dirigible. Something to that effect.
That's not the plan. And they're not going east. They're going west. And they're planning on driving the entire way, baby.
Oh, through Alaska.
Through Alaska and the Bering Strait.
That rocks, dude.
All the way through Russia into Europe, all the way to Paris. From New York.
I challenge you to a race through, like, they are taking the long way home.
No one had at this point even driven across the States. Like, there's no roads, no nothing.
Right.
Yeah. So this is a challenge.
Like, what's a max speed on the fucking Model T? Or, like, whatever automobile they're fucking using was, like, 20 kilometers an hour? It would take years.
Yeah, I think it has 40 or 60 horsepower. It's a four-stroke engine. It doesn't go very fast. And it's limited not by the car, it's limited by the terrain for sure. Because sometimes they're not going in miles per hour, they're going in feet per hour because they're just going through so much mud and gunk and
awesome. Everything. Okay, yeah. Like yeah. As I drove from Squamish, British Columbia to Calgary, Alberta in a 2017 car a couple years ago, right?
On a very big asphalt was invented 2 years later, by the way.
Yeah, so I drove on paved roads, and my dad was still like, well, for safety, I'm going to book you and your girlfriend a hotel in Golden, British Columbia. And it took us 17 hours, going 100.
Yep.
Oh, my fucking God.
Yep. It's a big trip. And originally, it was just some other car companies who planned to do it. And it was going to
be a marketing thing from Ford?
It is a marketing thing, not from Ford. It'll be from Thomas and from some European, because it was originally going to be only the French, the Italians, and the Germans who did it.
Right.
But Teddy Roosevelt was around back then, and he's like, they're not driving through my fucking country without us being in this race. Right?
Yeah. So, base Teddy Roosevelt, obviously.
So he's like, he ends up meeting our American drivers at one point. And he got in the car next to them. And he's like, I like men who do things, not the men who stay at home. So he gave his full endorsement to the American team.
Well, thumbs up to all our forklift listeners. Teddy Roosevelt would love you.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, this is a huge trip. The race is going to start.
Do you have the distance? Do you know how far that is?
22,000 miles.
Isn't the circumference of the earth 23,000?
Yeah, because you're not going in a straight line. So
I'm an idiot. Yeah, I was just like, because of course. I didn't factor in Alaska. Shit.
Yeah. And dang. You don't go across the whole Pacific Ocean, but you still have to really go all the way up and all the way around kind of stuff.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's fucking go, dude.
So six cars representing four nations were at the starting line in February 12th, 1908. It's in Times Square. This eventually would be a 169-day ordeal, which That's is it? The longest motorsport ever held. It's a long enough time. Yeah, they did it. It was a race, so I guess they went pretty fast for what they could. But
yeah, I mean... you don't have speed limits before you pave the roads.
No. Right. No, if you got a nice flat field with some good hard earth, you're going to go. Yeah.
Yeah. There's the prairies in the middle. I have no idea what the geography of Russia north of Japan is like. Ooh, maybe it's flat.
Russia is going to be a real hard part of this race.
Tundra.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's notable. When you say tundra, think February 12th in New York, that's winter. They're starting like in the worst part of winter.
But it's spring in Russia by the time you get there.
That's right. Nice and muddy in spring by the time we get there.
Yeah, and they're just like, we remember the last time somebody didn't respect the seasons. It was the Donner Party and they had to eat their kids. So you're not gonna eat your driver. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So we got how many cars? Yeah, six cars.
Six.
We got one for USA.
Okay.
One for Germany.
Okay.
We got one for Italy.
Okay.
We got three for France.
Okay.
I don't know how France managed to get three in there, but I guess they were like head of...
They're playing the numbers. They're just like, two of these guys are going to quit.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And all of the French will quit before anyone else.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But right now we have six cars and there's optimism in the air. The Industrial Revolution was not so long ago. America's like booming. A lot of stuff's going well there. There's optimism. Anything with wheels is kind of seen as progress. Things are great.
Even like a crippled guy is just like, look, the man of the future.
I bet you wheelchairs weren't looking so hot back then.
Yeah, I know. Back then, we called them crutches.
Yeah. So our star of the show for America is Monty Roberts.
Excellent name.
Yeah. He's like a racer. Probably racist back in 1982. Yeah. But he he's like the face of everything, and he's America's behind him for marketing purposes. If Monty Roberts driving your car, you're going to sell some cars.
Okay.
And we're driving the Thomas Flyer. So the Thomas is the company. The Flyer is the car.
I don't want to derail this too hard, but patreon.com/theloreboys if you want to listen to our bonus episode where we talk about horses. The Monty Roberts name has been recycled, and apparently a new man has it.
And yeah, I couldn't find him when I was looking him up a lot of the time.
I'm just going to drop this into the chat for you and then for the patrons with the episode picks. This is our current model of Monty Roberts.
He's a horse trainer. The man who listens to horses. I got him too when I was trying to find him.
Okay, so
the old Monty Roberts, he's kind of, you'll see as we go on, he's not as cool as America might think he is.
Oh no. So
we have Monty Roberts, who's like the face, the cool guy that's going to sell the cars. And then we have George Schuster, who is the mechanic. And he fixes the car. He keeps it running. He's like the unsung hero. Without George Schuster, there is no Thomas Flyer being remembered today kind of thing.
Okay, right.
Yeah. That's the dynamic. And pretty much every car, that's the setup. You got the driver. You got the mechanic. Because cars didn't run so good back then. You counted on it breaking down. Like, you brought a mechanic because it's going to break down. So you just got to maintain it the best you could.
But even like these extreme challenges these days within modern times where we find wheels much more mundane, it's still generally like marathon races are still generally two dudes because like, unless the challenge is specifically like the first solo crossing of the Sahara or whatever, you bring a second guy, right? Cause you get tired or whatever. And of course, obviously like Monty Roberts, doesn't know how to change a flywheel or a perspicacitor on his horseless carriage.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know if I can find a picture of Monty Roberts and Montague Roberts is his full name. Here we go.
Oh, it's not even Montgomery. Holy shit. He's named after the Shakespeare family.
Yep. There's the boys there. So I think...
Jesus Christ. Edwin Ross Thomas, Montague Roberts, and George Schuster. They don't tell you who any of these people are. Old guy in the back?
I think Monty's the smiler.
Yeah.
Schuster's the guy on the right, like that's looking a little more solemn. And then Edwin Ross is the guy who will not, he's too old to make a trip across the world, that's in the back there.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I guess this is the hood ornament that is blocking out 20% of the picture.
Yeah.
Photography had just been invented. We didn't have a good perspective back then. Yeah.
Let me post another photo just so we'll have some reference for what the cars looked like. Getting all ready to leave New York City there.
Hell yeah, dude. I would absolutely love to drive 22,000 miles on that thing.
Yeah. So it's the day of the race. It's February 1908. It's winter. No one has windshields. And a 250,000 people have lined the streets of New York to watch the competitors take off.
That's true. They just still had goggles. They didn't have a windshield.
Yes. Yeah. That's right. And they
22,000 miles with goggles on.
Yes, sir.
My God.
Yep. So Mayor George McClellan Jr., he was scheduled to shoot the starting pistol at 11 a.m. The vibes are strong. The city's watching. Tensions are high. And the mayor doesn't show up.
Is he dead?
We don't know. He just didn't show up on time. So a rail worker became impatient, snatched the pistol, and just shot it in the air 15 minutes later.
Yeah. Like a train yard guy?
Yep. It has his full name in the history on the Wikipedia. I didn't feel the need to include it. But
sure, yeah.
Yeah. And this late start with like it being unclear where the starting guy even was, this is a good predictor of how the race is going to go.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So off they went. Six shoddy cars heading west through New York in the snow. They're driving through thick snow in single file with the driver in the car and the mechanics walking alongside to judge the depth of the snow, to put planks of wood where they need to. So it's pretty impressive that they got across the whole world in that small amount of time with half the team walking for a lot of it.
That's more impressive.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Yeah, and they would hop in the car whenever they would have like a nice clear shot or something. But
did these things have like a trailer with a tent to sleep in, or they were just like, no, we'll stay in a hotel in?
They're going
Siberia.
They're going from town to town the best they could, and a lot of these towns it was the first car they'd ever seen, because cars don't go out in the middle of America.
Yeah, I was gonna say where does the like where does the guy in Idaho who hatched from an egg, like, say, like, here's where you get gas for the space vehicle you arrived in. Like, what the fuck?
Dude, yeah. And everybody hears about it, and they send, when you arrive in a new town, they send carrier pigeons back to New York to post the newest updates on what's going on in the race.
Okay, well, that's cool. That was reliable and high tech.
Like, yeah.
But also, where do you refuel?
So yeah, I have that answer. Sometimes the cars would just not get to the next fuel station, so they go by foot with buckets and bring like open topped buckets of gas back to their car.
Like the milkmaid with the rod on her shoulders, just like gasoline.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah. And this is the start of the race. So they're making their first progress. And they're literally bumper to bumper, just sticking together, heading out of New York. And
the awoogas must have been deafening from the from the squeaky horn on the front, right?
Yes, very much awoogas. So the teams will make their first progress on the 22,000-mile trek. But we'll take the time for a well-earned break and continue in a moment. And then we'll get into the more dense second half and the entire race. So stay with us for a moment and we'll be right back. Welcome back. We return to our 6-car race across the world. So if you remember from just a few moments ago, we were just leaving New York, and the drivers are driving, the mechanics are walking alongside, and like I just wrote in here, Pete already got to it, is yeah, how do you fuel up? You have to leave, find a town, and bring it back with open-topped buckets.
predating both paved roads and the funnel, they managed to get to their destination, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible.
And just like the guys like try to siphon out of a bucket, putting it below.
So you can, to yeah, be fair.
You just have to have the bucket higher, yeah.
The top of the aquarium behind me is just higher than the bucket that is also behind me.
Yeah, that's exactly how that would work. Your aquarium full of gasoline behind you, of course.
Well, yeah, that's what you got to keep an axolotl in. You don't know.
So, another thing too, like other than fuel, these cars break down way more than a car would break down today. So whenever you need to do a repair, you would hike to a hardware store and just do the best you could.
Oh, yeah, and then just fill a bucket with car parts and carry it back, right?
Yeah. And to make matters worse, all of the cars, except for the American car, were specifically made for this race. So they don't have, like, another car you can grab the parts off of and swap.
Of course, yeah.
I know that Thomas Flyer, I don't know about the other teams, they mailed ahead parts. They, like, sent a transmission to Russia. Like, we'll need it by the time we get there. And
okay, well, that's genius. That's-
yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then
for the time.
Yeah. Thomas Flyer was more of a car that had multiple, like, there's more than one of them, so there was reproducible, easier to get parts.
Is this the British one?
This is Thomas Flyer's American. They didn't really make it past the whole Henry Ford thing that happens later this year.
Okay.
So they go out of business eventually, and that's why we don't know what Thomas is anymore.
Okay.
But in 1908, they were cutting edge. In the first half of 1908, they were cutting edge
right.
Car stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, at the start of the race, they had a gentleman's agreement to switch who was in first place every 5 hours.
What?
So they're tip to tail, and they just like let the front guy will just fall to the back, and they'll just continually do that. and stick together for the beginning of the race.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why?
I couldn't find a reason why, but I think since some of the towns they passed through had never seen a car before at all, this is more of like a almost like a parade, and it's not as competitive right now.
Yeah, like a parade. It's like, well, we don't want Charlie Brown to be the first balloon these savages see. That would be crazy.
And it's more exciting for the newspapers if each town, when they wrote home, had a different leader, I guess.
Germany's ahead of whatever a town in Wyoming is called in 1908, right?
We will pass through Wyoming. Wyoming is one of the landmarks that I'll talk about.
Yeah, because in my head, I was trying to think, having played the Oregon Trail, and being... tangentially familiar with maps, trying to think of the easiest way is you would just go straight across the northern U.S.
Yeah.
Like, around the Great Lakes and then straight across, because that's their version of the prairies, whatever they call it there, which is, like, the square states. And then you'd have to go up. I would go up through Saskatchewan, because you have to go through Canada, obviously. And I wouldn't go through B.C. or Alberta because of the Rocky Mountains. And then I'd go through... I don't think we had the Yukon at this point, but then you'd go through like the Northwest Territories and then Yukon, Alaska, and then my knowledge of geography stops at, Siberia. So wherever the fuck they are there.
So the way they
get into it later. That's just that's just a game theory.
The way they actually were planning on doing it is they start in New York and they stay basically in the states. They went under the Great Lakes.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, New York, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, either Nebraska or South Dakota, Wyoming, Utah, Nevada, California. They actually went to California first. They went to San Francisco is like where they were going to hit on the other side of the map first.
Okay, so they were doing landmarks. They weren't thinking what would be most drivable. Again, I don't know what kind of civilization in the prairies of Canada.
Exactly. Drivable is you have to plot your cities in between or else you won't have fuel, you won't have repairs, you won't have everything.
Yeah, because I would avoid the Rocky Mountains entirely if the guy who was fixing my car was walking. It's just the thing that I just my plan.
Absolutely. How this will actually go, we'll see.
We'll get into. Sorry, I don't mean to. I don't want to make a fan. Like, I'm just Lore Boys canoning before this real thing that happens.
Right? No, yeah. So that's the plan, though. New York to California, up to Alaska, through Russia, through Europe is the plan.
Right. But you still have to go through BC.
Yeah. Yeah. So they had that gentleman's agreement, right? Everybody takes turns being in first place every 5 hours. It didn't take long for the stress of the road to cause all of the competitors to accuse each other of cheating and give up on their gentleman's agreement. So they'd be like, well, no, you use the train tracks. And the Americans were accused of using the railroad, and if they got stuck, railroad cars to pull them out.
What?
So they would just follow the railway, and if there's...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And because the railway would be, like, also the most level ground, too, because that's pretty much the only infrastructure they had that went across the country.
Yeah, of course.
And then all the other parties had actually used horses to pull their horseless carriages, which that's not a horseless carriage, huh?
Yeah, no.
But since the first leg of the race was in America, it just so happened that when the locals were to help the racers who got stuck, they would favor the Thomas Flyer. And they would charge extra money to help the French or the Germans or the Italians.
Get it, dude. Yeah. Sorry.
Yep. So I don't know why I say we. I'm not really American. I'm closer to America than these others, though. So we were in the lead. We were doing well. One French car broke its transmission before even leaving the state of New York and dropped out.
Incredible.
Yeah. So one Frenchie down.
Yeah, even their car parts were cowards. I don't know what the transmission is in a current car. I don't know what the transmission would be like in a car built of what I assume is wood covered in canvas.
Yeah. I have no idea, man. I'm not good with car parts. But all I knew is that they didn't make it very far.
Yeah. Okay.
They got stuck in the snow, part broke. They just gave up right off the rip. But a month into the trip, they had made it to Colorado, and the American team was in the lead with 5 cars left in the race.
Okay.
One of the French team members with the last name Hansen got into a fight with his own French team on the car. And they're challenged to a duel with pistols.
No.
Yeah. Imagine the car stuck, you're yelling at your friend and you're fuck it, duel me, man. Take out your gun.
If we get stuck on our way to Bobby's this weekend, I will fucking kill you, Jamie.
We're gonna die. So the French guy, instead of potentially dying halfway around the world from where he was born, he left his team.
Could you imagine dying in Colorado?
Ugh. Oh, geez, awful. Yeah. But the French guy didn't give up, the one who got into the duel and then quit the French team. He went to the American team, pledged to the flag of America, and joined the American team. So Hansen's on our side now.
Can you hit your top speed of 9 miles an hour with that extra body on the vehicle?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the French guy's got to walk behind or something.
But it's like 100 feet in front of the guy he threatened to kill on the road, and they have to switch places every 5 hours. What the fuck?
This is over by now. By now, everybody hates each other, okay, and they're just going as fast as they can. So one of the other French cars that was having some technical issues, they sneakily put their car on a train to San Francisco, which is cheating, very much cheating.
How do you get away with it? Sneakily?
Yeah, so he sneakily books a train car for his car for his own car.
My wife and I would like to board this train to San Francisco. It's just like a car, a dress, car.
Yeah. A bonnet, like over
yeah, exactly.
There's a wife dressed as a car inside.
It's like a couple in an entire family all dressed as cars. Oh no. The woman like waves at the car like, oh, Cheryl.
Yeah, exactly.
Aruga. So, yeah. Like, oh, she said hi. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so not a cool move from the French there. And
no.
Know what happened? The media caught him. A journalist saw it happening and ratted him out.
No, it would be a journalist.
Yeah, I hate the media. Napa. Laser beam. Yeah. So rather than face the music of the consequences on the race, they just dropped out and headed back to France. They would have had to add a bunch of time to their, they basically would have taken the slowest time and then added it to their time. So whenever, even if they got there first in, Paris, they would have like X amount of days for the other people to catch up.
Right.
That's what the punishment would have been, but the French guy's like, I'd rather just go home. So fuck it.
Yeah.
So four cars remain, not even across the US yet. And
I'd argue this is the easiest part of the race, guys.
Yeah, it will be. I think the last leg is probably the easiest, but you're going to be so fucking tired for it. Because Europe probably has like the train, like a lot more infrastructure than would be around in America.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
The mid part, it's gonna be a long time in Russia.
Russia's gonna suck, but once you start to get to like Poland, Germany, like things are gonna speed up a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah, but we're far from that. We're in Colorado. We haven't even gone across the Bering Strait, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, we haven't left the U.S.
So the first car to San Francisco. We're skipping a lot of like little details of problems and things, but they made it there first to San Francisco, 1.5 months after they left in mid-March. And they're 900 miles in front of the next person, which is the Italians.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's already a huge feat. No one had driven across the U.S. before. He did New York to California in a month and a half, and way faster than the Italians, although biased Americans kind of helped that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shocking that the sabotage along the way gave them such an advantage.
Yep. But we have to go through their territory eventually, too. But for now, we got the advantage.
You don't need to drive through Italy.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So, yeah, they're going up to Alaska next to go across the Bering Strait. So they drive all the way through British Columbia. They get to Alaska. And they get to a
nothing had happened in BC. Sorry.
No, nothing that notable. BC didn't even come up. They said they drove to Alaska at this point. Yeah.
Oh, man, I wish there was a country between the U.S. and Alaska that something interesting may have happened.
Back then, it might even have been just northern BC they got to and not quite Alaska. Like, it would be also blurry.
Oh, no, Alaska then was Russia. They bought it from them. When the fuck did that happen?
I think it's already Alaska by now, but it's worth checking.
1867. Okay.
1860. Oh, it's a new purchase at this point.
Yeah, March 30th. They bought Alaska before Canada existed. So now I understand.
Right. Yeah.
Also, they paid in modern dollars $7 million for Alaska, which is
in a time before good. GPS and maps were like sketchy. They got as north as they could, and then they were told, if you want to go any farther, you'll have to take that car apart and transport it by dog sled.
Well, yeah, obviously. If they didn't have roads, they don't have winter tires.
Yeah. And even then, the Bering Strait doesn't actually freeze over anymore. You cannot drive or walk to Alaska from Alaska to Russia.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the ocean. So they get all the way north, and they go pretty far out of their way, but they make good time because they go all the way up and then all the way back to San Francisco because they had to turn around. Or they went to Seattle instead, actually.
Oh, yeah. they get up to like the Bering Strait, which is just an archipelago now covered in snow. And they turn around like, ah, fuck. And they get back to they get to Washington State. And there's like, it's ocean now.
Yeah, exactly. So they sent their carrier pigeons back from Alaska, those brave pigeons.
They would have just ripped to pieces by owls, dude. Those things never made it. They never made it.
But somehow they knew. Somehow there was communication because they were able to tell all the other teams to Alaska, Bering Strait. We a little big for our britches there. That's not something we could do. So we're going back to Oregon. Or no, we're going to Seattle. Sorry.
Yeah.
And we are going to ship the boats across. You guys can have a nap in the hotel that night, and we'll ship it across, and you can start fresh in Russia. So They didn't actually drive across the whole world. That's fine.
That's very disappointing.
Can't blame them for not driving across the ocean, I guess.
You're right. I can't. I mean, maybe I could. Those big inflatable tires. Right?
Yeah. Like that one guy who just made that big hamster wheel and he tried to go across the ocean and the government in Florida is like, no, you can't do that, man. Yeah, and they went and took him back. And he got sent to jail. He threatened to blow up his hamster. Yeah, he's like, I've got a bomb in this thing. Don't try and take me out of it. I'm going across the ocean. Maybe this is another episode I gotta do.
At this point, one, if that guy didn't blow himself up and is out of prison, let's get him on.
No, it was recent. It was in the last year, I think. So he's
this hamster ball guy.
It was. We talked about it in the Discord, but
that's probably how I missed it.
So we go back to Seattle. Americans had to go to Alaska and back, and the others, since they were so far behind, only had to go straight to Seattle.
I like how they had to go to a coastal state to just be like, "There's a second ocean that we can't drive through." And they're like, oh, fuck.
It was fucked, yeah. And this is now not fair, though, because the Americans were required to go to Alaska and none of the other teams were. So America is now in dead last being shipped across to Russia.
Oh, you got to get... okay, so their pigeons made it from Alaska to Seattle.
Nobody else had to go up to Alaska. Yeah, they drove straight to Seattle.
And then the additional pigeons notified the teams en route that they didn't have to turn north up through British Columbia, and they just stayed there. Okay.
Right. So I don't know how the comms actually worked way back when, but somehow they managed that only Americans had to go through Canada into Alaska. So what the, while they're being shipped over to Russia at this point, everyone's already in Russia. America's on the way. And the race people that run the race, they're like, well, we're going to award 15 days to the Americans because that's what their lead was before this whole thing. So it took them 15 days to go through from California to Alaska and back.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's not so bad.
Yeah, it's a week through BC, I guess.
Yeah. Well, not at that speed, at that time, that's not that pretty fucking good.
Yep.
Like, it still takes a week to drive across our entire country now.
Yeah.
Like, that's, which I understand is 15 times wider, but like,
what took them a month?
It's been 113 years or whatever.
Yeah, it took them a month and a half to do what takes us like a week to drive across, I guess, now.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
That's pretty good for them, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
So they get to Russia, and the Russian government starts to say, hey, you guys should probably just ship your cars on the train. It's not safe to go through our country. And they're like, why? Why wouldn't we go through your country? Well, there's famine, disease, Chinese bandits, undrivable terrain, mosquitoes as big as locusts. And they basically told them all these like tall tales of why Russia's the most dangerous place ever.
Which, and no mention of the Yeti, which is right in the middle. It's right there.
And you know, some of these things are probably true, but why Russia didn't want them just to drive through, I have no idea.
There's no Russian driver, eh?
No, no Russian driver.
From the Tsar's Russia?
No. But Russia would be the nail in the coffin for the last French car dropped out, because this is the hardest place to get through by far. America was hard, but this is even worse.
Yeah, yeah, I hope the Tsar of Russia was just like, hey, whoa, buddy, Russia's not safe. You're going back the way you came.
Yeah.
And they ship the French guy the opposite direction back around the world to France.
Yeah, he's got to do an even longer trip eastward. Yeah, yeah. Nice. So that now who's left? We got USA, Italy, Germany.
Yeah.
Last three cars. And as far as I know, all three of these will make it.
Wow, just like the Second World War, they all made it.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Allies, USA, Italy, and Germany. No. So Monty, our pretty boy face driver, right? He dropped out. I forgot to mention, our main driver, Monty, dropped out in Wyoming. So up until this point, it's been Schuster, George Schuster, the like techie guy who just knows how to fix the car, has been taking this thing since Wyoming. He went all the way to Alaska and he came back down, and now he's in Russia.
Okay, well, that's incredible. Honestly, he's the best man for the job. He knows how the car works.
Yep.
He is the guy I was talking about doing the solo crossing of the Sahara.
No, he is the guy. Yeah. Yeah. Without him, the Americans would definitely not have done as well. This is
right.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that earlier
at the beginning.
Yeah, we knew it wasn't the French. You can still guess if you want to know. If
I was I was ridiculing the French and just stumbled across an answer. Okay.
Yeah.
No. Not now.
So we have going. It's German, Italy, U.S. right now. With U.S. has the caveat: if they arrive within the 15 days, they still win.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
But Germany's in the lead.
Because they were just like, oh, the U.S. discovered a ocean. Oh, look at that. We'll give them credit. Like, what the fuck? Like, you knew it was there.
Yeah.
They did zero research before driving across the planet.
I mean, how do you do the research, though?
Pigeons, like, obviously. Somehow communicating. Fuck.
I guess so. I think pigeons, though, you can only send news home, right? I don't know how that works.
Well, okay, so now I'm imagining what they've been storing on their trucks. They've got they've got buckets of car parts, yeah. Buckets of gasoline, just yeah. Rattling around, and then buckets of pigeons that they yeah. Just have enough.
If one of the pigeons dies, you know you got to carry the gasoline for a while.
Yeah,
they're like canaries for the gasoline. Yeah, it's
just kind of like, it's like in a cage just hanging off the exhaust. It's been dead for days. I'm like, that's poison.
Yeah, they'd probably still eat it. No. So now they're going through, man. And Thomas sends out word. I don't know how the communications exactly work, but they get word to Schuster. So the car company tells Schuster, hey, we want Monty to come back in Europe and just be there for when you cross the finish line.
Okay.
Because Monty's the American face. He's going to sell the cars if they win. But George, it was like, no, fuck you.
Also American.
Yeah, I'm also American, and I've driven this thing much farther than he ever could. And he's been sleeping in a warm bed, and I have been sleeping in the back with the gasoline and the pigeons.
Yeah, exactly. Just yeah. Whacking the engine with a wrench the whole way, which is how engineering worked in 1908.
Of course.
Oh, I love the fact that things really do... the more they change, the more they stay the same, is the fact that the lamestream Greedia decided who the hero was.
Montague.
He quit, and they turned around and were just like, we would still love for us not to be wrong. It's just what the current U.S. media does on Twitter every day.
Yep. Yeah, it's pretty bad. That. Pretty bad, but... good for George. George Schuster, he says, no, I won't have it. I'm going to keep driving. I just won't tell you where I am or whatever.
Chad, move. Yeah. Yeah. So what are you going to do? Fucking find me in Russia?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You guys couldn't find Bin Laden.
Yep.
Like 100 years later, you're not going
to
find me.
Dude, yeah. And just so, okay, to say how hard Russia was, the mud was so deep that some horses drowned in the mud. It was insane. And you'd have to completely remap the position you're going. Some days you wouldn't make like any progress. You would get a few inches in an hour. And this is the hardest part of the race. And everyone went through it.
To be fair, I still have no idea what is east of like St. Petersburg in Russia.
I don't know. Like,
It could just all be wilderness.
Yeah. And like you said, it's the spring too. So all the snow, Siberian snow, like the Siberian winter is melting. They just have like the muddiest, grossest terrain ever. But Schuster makes it all the way through Russia, tells the lamestream Greedy to fuck off. The race was much easier after Russia. Once they started to get into these places where they have like stone roads and have railroad tracks, and people have been here for thousands of years at this point who are Western civilization, right? Like,
yeah.
So this goes a lot better. And 5.5 months after the start of the race, the Germans first arrived to Paris. But don't forget,
it's going to be the first time in a little while that the Americans get concerned with that sentence, actually.
Okay, so the Germans are already...
Hey, whoa, I understand you made it Hitler, but why don't you just give us 15 days, yeah?
Yeah. And I love this finish for the U.S. So Schuster rolls into Paris 4 days later.
Okay.
And after 22,000 miles, after nearly half a year of exertion, he's so close to his goal, but as soon as he gets to the city limits... the French notice he doesn't have a light on his car.
No, and no way. It's the oldest trick in the fucking book. It is.
And the Parisian street laws road laws were to say you have to have a light. So they started to arrest him. And right before the finish, after like 6 months of literally like watching horses drown in the mud, like this is the worst. The worst fucking thing you could put yourself through.
I will go to jail for the rest of my life. Just arrest me in 40 minutes. Please. Yeah,
exactly.
I have so little work to do.
Yeah. So, a good French bystander was driving by with a bike that had a powered lamp on the front from pedaling. And he offered to give the lamp to Schuster so he could finish the race.
Okay.
Because even though the Germans finished first, there wasn't a huge celebration yet. They knew there was the leeway, right? So they're waiting for the Americans, and they gave them, but the light, they couldn't figure a way to fix it onto the front of the car. So they just strapped it to the roof, the whole bike with the lamp. But the cops couldn't say anything because technically they're up to code by now. So there's just like,
also the fact that they had like even like embryonic laws about motor vehicles at this point is unbelievable, right?
Yeah. So France was ahead at this point in like making cars, because that's why they had three cars in. So
yeah,
they were,
of course,
like,
I was thinking about the Model T. This is unfair. I was thinking about the Model T. You got me all patriotic and shit, so I stopped thinking. And yeah. I was like, oh, wait, no, like Europe is way further ahead, obviously.
Yeah. This honestly could have been part – it was a world story. Everyone was following it. It could have been part of the reason the price for the Model T, but why automobiles became known as something that was more reliable, because people wouldn't even trust them to drive across the city before. But now hearing it can make it from like literally across the world, and then now there's a cheap one. Henry Ford benefited from this race and stuff. So
yeah, instead of airbags, it's just like, well, if the driver's not a pussy Frenchman, then you could drive across the country if you had to.
Yeah. So they put the bike on, they pull up, and the Thomas Flyer and George Schuster wins the race. And everybody cheers. The French are smoking and throwing wine in the air, doing something. I don't know.
I like the fact that this whole thing of the Americans driving across the world required the fact that, like, okay, so you're going to drive across the world.
Mm-hmm.
There were horses, trains, bicycle, and also ships involved. Meaning,
yes,
all things considered, this didn't happen. This is a fake event.
Yeah. It's true. They really did get everything else in. Like, other than a plane, I think is the only thing they didn't.
But the Wright brothers took off in, 1903? Like, four and a half years before this happened?
Yeah, the first woman had just flown this year.
Yeah, ew. That's no place for a car.
Yep.
Scratch the paint.
Yep. So, what did Schuster win? He won a mechanic job at Thomas Automobiles for as long as the country would be around, or the company would be around, and that would be 5 years until it went out of business. So Schuster's prize was kind of cut short and robbed from him, but he was
poor bastard.
He really was the unsung hero, and now we can sing him as the real hero. George Schuster is the man. Monty Roberts is just a face. Now you can still see this car, the Thomas Flyer. It was actually for many years just left in a garage, and it got rusted up so bad that it was unrecognizable. And the grandson of George Schuster found it, and he looked at a way that it was repaired. They weren't even sure it was the right car, but he found a repair that only his grandfather could have done on the road in this crazy way. Which gave him, told him that it was his car. Yeah. So now it is in Buffalo at the Pierce Arrow Buffalo Transportation Museum. So if you want to see
this
car.
Close, we should go.
Yeah, it'd be cool. Anyways, this was the 1908 race from New York City to Paris, which is just fucking nutty. And I'm glad it happened.
It didn't. We've established.
Pretty crazy. Big props to George. Big props to everyone. It must have sucked to be in the Germans who got there first, but like, because the Americans went a different way. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's so funny that no other country cheated. I mean, I guess like the Tsar of Russia was just like, oh no, too many bandits.
Yeah,
too many bandits upon the Silk Road. You can't take this sort of thing. But like, they did get the advantage, and then they just like. I don't know. It's so fun. It's such a fake thing.
I love the story.
It's such an amazing, like, an American way of winning something is just by just having people break the rules on your behalf, which is just a thing that still occurs.
Yeah.
On that, of course, it did happen. I was kidding. It's such a funny fucking story.
Yeah, I loved it. It's such a good story. I want to do more like real life. Weird history stories like this. I'm kind of falling in that that groove right now, and I'm hoping to find more for you guys.
I think because I've seen a couple of videos about like wacky inventions and silly stuff like this, your time period that you're gonna love is probably the 1850s up until this point. Everything before like the mid 19th century to World War One, where people were just inventing shit we kind of recognize and use today.
Yeah, it's like post-industrial.
Yeah, exactly. Like the leisure engineering portion of history, right? Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. All right, well, that was that. If you want to find us online, you can go to discord.gg/loreboys, L-O-R-E-B-O-Y-S. Thanks again. We got a few boosts this week. Let me scroll up and see who it is so I can give you a thank you. Rondo and Evie, thank you for boosting the server, making sure that we still get to keep our beautiful custom Earl. And if you want to get a hold of us, Discord's a great place, or you can contact at loreboys.com, and eventually we'll read that out. Pete, what's up with you?
Yeah, at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Basically, just like keep an eye on that for any artwork, any updates on my comics, some important stuff happening right now. There is one thing I will admit, is I did kind of fall in love with my social media break, and I was like, hey, send us memes and all that shit. I've been deleting those messages unread for weeks now. Don't. Just don't do it. I'm not going to read them. I'm so sorry.
I was surprised you asked for that, to be honest.
It was fun for a long time until I got way too busy for social media, and now it's just like I wake up with like 40 fucking things to read. I'm like, I'm not going to do any of this. It's not a personal thing against anybody who has participated in the sending stuff to me, but I'm not going to look at them. I'll let you know if I start doing it again. I'll react to shit if I'm back on the horse. But yeah, otherwise, yeah, it's getting the Discord. I'm not super present online these days, but I pop in here and there and for subjects, and of course answer ats and tags and whatnot. I'm happy to say hi.
Cool. And if you'd like to join us on our race, we're going to be doing a race from the North Pole to the South Pole.
Wait, is this the
prime? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, before we give you the real shit, patreon.com/theloreboys if you'd like to help the show financially. Again, thank you to Clippy and Adeptus Astards this week for joining the Patreon and joining, as well as Ed Gein's Belt, who has been a subscriber of ours for a little while and finally jumped into the Discord, I think this morning or something like that, before I had electricity. So thank you. But yes, of course, we have a proper offer for you right now from Jamie here, instead of just some fake Patreon shit that doesn't matter, linked below.
Yeah, so if you want to dress up like a car and drive around in my wife, then we can totally get you a car suit and a way to get to my wife. But she's all the way on the South Pole, and we're at the North Pole. So the first one there gets to be a car in my wife.
Nice.
But you have to drive there because you're a car.
Those are the rules.
Yes, exactly. And that was a fun episode. So I think that would constitute Loreboys
out of the race, just like France.